to allow for entrepreneurs to succeed, it really is about a hub of different resources and community. It's not just one thing. It's not funding. It's not education or training. It's not the mentorship. It's not, you know, the infrastructure in this, in the environment that they're in. It really is an ecosystem. It's everything. You need various different resources and support mechanisms to allow for entrepreneurs to succeed.
Hello and welcome to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, a source of inspiration and actions from African leaders and founders. I'm Mark Israel, founder, CEO, startup coach, university lecturer, engineer, and human being. And I have the pleasure of being your host today. Today, we will step into entrepreneurial education. The world has changed, not only because of the current pandemic, but also because of the aspiration of the Y and Z generations. How do we prepare those guys to become entrepreneurs is what we are going to talk about today. And for that, Lucy, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. That was a great self-intro. I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. Nice. We're really, really happy to have you as a guest today. We are, you know, far away from each other, actually. So you were in Mauritius, you just moved back for family in Colorado in the US. So you're just, more than a couple, actually, 11 hours behind us. And I think that, and we met a while back, actually. I think the first time I was auditioning startups at the African Leadership College here in Mauritius for SeedStar. I can remember well. It was quite a cool afternoon, actually, we had. But before we deep dive into the subject, so really, I would like to plan the decor. And can you tell us more about yourself, your journey at ALU, and maybe start with a few words on the African Leadership University?
Yes, sure. So I'm originally from New York. I grew up in the East Coast in the U.S. And my introduction into this space of entrepreneurship, alternative education, let's say, really began my senior year in college. I went to a small liberal arts college in Vermont, which liberal arts kind of means you're there to explore, and it's not as the learning that you do is not as based in practice. It's very theoretical. And as a very hands-on learner, who it took me a while to kind of figure out my own leadership or learning style. I didn't understand that learning was not right for me until my senior year in college, where I took this leadership and innovation seminar where everything was hands-on. Everything was, we did a bunch of real-world cases with companies and organizations who were consulting with the course. Everything was taught by a mentor, and we had even done this innovation challenge throughout the term where we like identified a problem that we ourselves wanted to solve for and then went through the motions of solving for that problem. And I came alive in that class. Like I just, that was exactly how I knew I was meant to learn. I was active in class, I participated, and I like never wanted the day to end. And so after that course, I realized that, or it started opening my eyes to the fact that alternative and experiential education could actually be a career in itself. And this was my senior year. So I was also exploring the question of what I wanted to do and why. I knew that I loved this course, and I knew that that was a good place to start. So I actually joined the broader team that helped to organize and design that course. It was at Middlebury is a college that I went to, Middlebury's Innovation Hub, that had organized and facilitated a handful of different innovation and learning programs for students, undergraduate students who were looking to explore and develop their interests further and apply it to real world application. So I, right after graduation, and worked at the center for 2 years, helping to run their equivalent of an entrepreneurship program. So there were around 10 different innovation and entrepreneurship, let's say, experiences that students could participate in. There was an off-campus kind of makerspace. There was an entrepreneurship course. There was a pitch competition. There was a crowdfunding platform, things like that. And I was also very involved in helping to amplify and strengthen the entrepreneurial ecosystem in the state of Vermont. Wow. And that, I mean, I was new to that space. I was just out of college, but I absolutely loved what I was doing. I loved working with young entrepreneurs who were not, I mean, were basically my age, many of whom I was friends with when I was still in school and then kind of transitioned into more of a mentorship advisory role. But I loved what I did, but I was ready to leave Vermont. And I was actually looking, I am really drawn to the education space, but I was looking to, if I wanted to continue in education, I wanted to be in a more non-traditional kind of alternative education environment. Middlebury is an old institution, and while the programs that we were running were quite innovative, a lot of the energy we spent was trying to validate or kind of get buy-in from the institution in terms of the importance of hands-on experiential learning. And I thought that was it was very obvious to me the benefits of it, and it was a lot of energy given to trying to sell the program. So I came across ALU. I guess that's my background, how I came into the space. I came across ALU through my work at Middlebury in the space of alternative kind of disruptive education. A lot of people know what ALU is doing. So I was always very interested in the university, but thought Mauritius was just way too far. So it was kind of that'd be fun, that'd be amazing, but it's just, that's crazy. But I had been connected. One of my very close colleagues and mentors at Middlebury had done some work with ALU, and she was like, you should just explore it, have a conversation and see what is they're doing, because it's just good learning in general. So anyways, got into some first informational interviews, and one thing led to another, ended up applying for a role that by the time I got the offer, they offered me something different, more based on my experiences, but they essentially offered me the opportunity to build what we were doing at Middlebury, their entrepreneurship ecosystem department at ALU in Mauritius. And it was really when I got that opportunity that I realized it was an experience I couldn't turn down. And it was an incredible opportunity for me as a young aspiring leader to be put into some big shoes, or into have a big responsibility. And I kind of told myself, if it doesn't go well, if I get homesick, if I can go home after 6 months, a year, whatever it is. But now fast forward, it's 2.5 years later. I love what I do. There are a lot of challenges, obviously, in just building something new. But it's been the most incredible learning experience. And yeah, I'm still going strong 2.5 years later.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. So you're just jumping in the cold water, new country, new experience, building something from scratch. How did you cope?
Well, I think just telling myself again and again, I'm here to learn. I will gain something out of this no matter what that is, you know? And I think that's a lot of the stuff about entrepreneurship development that I, you know, help try to instill in students is things that I've just picked up along the way. Not that I'm not an entrepreneur myself, but I also saw this as an opportunity to try my hand at it. Building this has been like creating a venture in itself. So I think what I tell students is like, it is a lot about learning from failure and just trying something, getting started, getting the ball rolling. And I definitely had to take that advice to heart in doing this. Just telling myself over and over again, there is a lesson in every failure that I experience, especially here when I'm so far away from home, really outside my comfort zone, but I'm meeting such incredible people. This will be something that I will never forget. And again, like being able to go through that design process from start to finish in an environment that is entirely new to me would teach me more than I could ever learn in a job that was more predictable in the US. So it took a leap of faith and was—
True, no, true. No, and I love the approach. And I think that's probably something that, well, not only Mauritians, but many, many people have to learn. So which is coping with failure and learning from failure. And I honestly think that, you know, I worked in the US for a while. So I worked for a small company in the US, you know, called Microsoft. So pretty small. But I've always been fascinated by the fact that most Americans, and Canadians, I would say, I think it's North Americans overall, just don't see failure as something that they fear. It's just something that, well, it's a fact of life. We're going to learn from that. I would say not 100% of them, but most of the guys who are in the business just see failure as something which is completely natural. Okay. Up to a point that I generally call something which is failing forward. If you can fail forward, well, you know, just continue grinding, you know, something will come out of it. Yes. But it's cool. But tell me more. I love the fact that you talk to me about entrepreneurship ecosystem building. What do you mean by entrepreneurship ecosystem? I'm just curious.
I know. I think we sometimes throw around a lot of jargon in this space and forget that sometimes it sounds like jargon, or that it's not a term that others outside the space use often. And when the role was first framed to me, I was told I was building an entrepreneurial ecosystem, and I honestly didn't even really know what that meant. But the way that I understand it is that to allow for entrepreneurs to succeed, it really is about a hub of different resources and community. It's not just one thing. It's not funding. It's not education or training. It's not the mentorship. It's not, you know, the infrastructure in the environment that they're in. It really is an ecosystem. It's everything. You need various different resources and support mechanisms to allow for entrepreneurs to succeed, especially young entrepreneurs who kind of have the odds against them and who don't necessarily feel like they can relate to or crack into the space. You need an enabling entrepreneurial system to really, I mean, first and foremost, just excite and inspire those to try it out. And I guess I can like share more about why ALU even thinks entrepreneurship is important in the first place. But we want our students to be able to feel like all of our students, by the time they leave ALU, might need to have had some sort of entrepreneurial experience. If it's just, you know, attending a few talks and hearing stories about other young entrepreneurs who have tried and failed and got back up again, like that, those lessons are valuable no matter who you are and what you want to do. So I think that, anyways, to go back to the ecosystem question, having that kind of enabling environment really creates a welcoming space where you get a diverse set of entrepreneurs, entrepreneurial leaders who have different interests, different backgrounds, different skill sets, and allow it to, I think an ecosystem also allows for a more self-guided journey, which is what entrepreneurs need to have, that ability to self-guide and have ownership over their own paths. But that's what I'll say. That's how I understand the term ecosystem is a
sure. environment. No, and I know it's a loaded word, actually, ecosystem, and in the startup world particularly. So, and I was actually talking to a journalist this afternoon, and he was asking, do you think that we have the right ecosystem to, you know, to grow startups in Mauritius, and what do we define? Yeah, there are incubators, accelerators, VCs, and so on and so forth. So you need a set of different people support to be able to grow your business, for sure. But it's a loaded term. But tell me more. So basically, so you're out of the ALU, there was no entrepreneurs program or whatsoever. You built it from scratch, or was there something before you arrived?
Was. So take a step back and talk about the entrepreneurial support or the entrepreneurial focus at ALU. It's really about ALU is in the space, is part of a broader ecosystem of education organizations focused on developing leaders and connecting them to opportunities, really opportunities that can position them to become effective agents of change. And the focus on leadership development, while we're called the Leadership University, is really in particular entrepreneurial leadership, because we want our students to be equipped with a problem-solving mindset that can allow them to address problems as major opportunities, and really brought more broadly to have our students work to address the rising unemployment crisis on the continent. And entrepreneurship is obviously a direct gateway towards that by creating jobs. And so ALU is a spinoff. The first iteration of within the AL group was African Leadership Academy, which is a 2-year pre-university high school program based in Johannesburg that's all about leadership and entrepreneurship development. ALU was then the second spinoff off of that, realizing that students were often seeking opportunities off the continent, and we were actually contributing to more of a brain drain challenge where the talent that we were developing was going elsewhere. So ALU, our founder, Fred Swanaker, which if you don't know who he is, definitely should watch his TED Talks and read more about his work, had a vision of starting an ecosystem of universities on the continent to really focus on investing in and developing the next generation of entrepreneurial leaders for the future of Africa. And we took a bunch, so now I can get more into the specifics about your question. We took the core learning model at ALA, which is very much focused on peer learning, projects-based, and a heavy focus on entrepreneurship. And because they're a boarding school environment, they can really regulate their kind of internal entrepreneurship stimulator at a university. It's a little bit more challenging, but our core curriculum, which is this one-year program that all students have to go through before they can go into their other degrees, is called Leadership Core. And there are four courses within Leadership Core that teach our students the kind of the key leadership skills that we see as essential in thriving in the workplace. Those courses are Communications for Impact, which really has an emphasis on storytelling and learning how to communicate effectively and strategically. Then there's Data and Decisions, all about kind of making data-informed strategic decisions. There's Projects, which is really like an internal consulting club at ALU, where we work with external organizations to create cases that students work towards, and they learn how to break down complex problems and break them into project plans and work in, within to solve them. And then the last course is Entrepreneurial Leadership. And that really is the introduction that all students get to entrepreneurship, where they really learn about the fundamentals to entrepreneurship. That's where they go through a lot of self-discovery to understand who they are as leaders and their own leadership profile, so then they can understand how to better lead others. And through that course, they are taught to identify a problem within their immediate community. So it can be on ALC's campus or around Mauritius, and then work within teams to solve for that problem. But that's a year-long process, because at the very beginning, they just learn about how to identify their own skills and interests and passions, how to gravitate towards a problem that they're interested in solving for, how to create a problem statement, all sorts of things. So it really starts from like pre-incubation, just getting them to understand kind of understand and practice an entrepreneurial mindset. So that's
go ahead.
That's Entrepreneurial Leadership, the EL course. And then that's kind of the launch pad. So we had that when I came to ALU. What we didn't have was a department or a program to allow them to continue their EL interests beyond that year one course. So that's where I started. That's where the Student Ventures Program, or SVP, comes in.
I got it. And I wanted to ask, so because this is project outside of the university, of course, and it could be in the social space, so it could be an NGO or a for-profit organization, respective.
Yes, that's been my number one approach, is allowing it to be a space for all interests, because again, that the minds, it's the outcome, of course, is like we do want to be able to have students launch ventures throughout and immediately after their time at ALU, because the ultimate objective here is around job creation. But the biggest objective here under that is really just to instill an entrepreneurial mindset in all of our students, to like regardless of their interests, their passions, and what they want to do afterwards. So yes, NGOs, for profit, everything, social sector.
Okay. It's an interesting approach because it can stimulate creativity, ideas. But what are the main challenges that you've seen? Because those are young guys. And I would say at an early stage, like that, you can have, you want to change the world. Let's call a spade to reality. Said, I got big ideas. Now I need to execute that big idea. So, but what are the main challenges that you have seen in executing all those big ideas that the guys had?
Yeah, I think, so when you're speaking about entrepreneurship in an educational setting, which naturally we are in because we're based on a university, students have a lot of trouble. And I mean, this is at ALU, where our entire learning model is based on being hands-on and applying your learning to the outside world. And our students still have a lot. I still notice that our students have challenges with gaining traction and actually putting things to practice. Like, they have amazing ideas and they're great at communicating them. But when it comes to just getting out in the field, gaining traction, that is where I see a lot of challenges. And I try in the, like, the design of the program to try to, get students out off campus more and really just testing assumptions and like getting the ball rolling on building up a product or a service. But I'd say, traction is one of the hardest things when you're working with student entrepreneurs. And I think that, well, it's because, you know, learning is naturally framed in the classroom, even if you're ALU and really rethinking how students learn. But there's also, you know, like, at first and foremost, these students are students, and there's that commitment issue where, you know, this is an extracurricular program where school comes first, and we can't tell them that school doesn't come first. That's what they're first and foremost here to learn, but holding them accountable, keeping them committed, and like incentivizing them to really get out there and gaining traction, I'd say is quite a challenge, but you can get creative with how you address and solve for it.
So over the 2.5 years that you already spent there, did you have any successes, you know, big visible successes around those student ventures?
Definitely. I think the ones that were, and it will be interesting to see how COVID continues to affect this, because again, the biggest issue was really challenge was getting them outside the classroom. Or into the community in Mauritius. And a lot of the students that had the bigger successes were those who were building e-ventures, digital ventures that could be back at home in their home country. So we had a lot of like ed tech kind of learning platforms that are, you know, thriving now, especially because of COVID. Yeah. But they were able to, you know, sink their teeth in and really dive into building that throughout their time at ALU, because location wasn't as much of an issue. Because a lot of our students, I mean, most of our students aren't actually from Mauritius. Yeah. So many of them, when we talk about entrepreneurship and solving for problems that they're passionate about, think about solving for problems in their home countries. And so that, you know, how can you get them outside the classroom and testing and trying their hand on entrepreneurship while they're in Mauritius if what they want to be solving for is back at home? But I'd say like the best way for us to address that is we really try to frame entrepreneurship at ALU as practice for when they graduate and are ready to work on it full time once they're no longer students. So and the way that they practice entrepreneurship is like all of the systems in place that SVP has put together. We have like one example is the campus economy system or stimulation that we helped oversee. So ALC is a campus, residential campus, and we allow for our students when they do identify challenges in terms of campus services that they're not getting to start those services as an entrepreneurial venture. And so we see a lot of kind of becomes its own internally stimulated economy where we have a campus spa and they hire a graphic designer or, you know, a student artist to create their graphics and their marketing materials. And then we have, you know, a student team who does events and production who set up their room nicely. There's an interior design venture that helps when students are moving in, helps them set up their dorm rooms nicely, but they've helped the spa like set up the room in a really nice way. So you see a lot of, collaboration, company collaboration within the internal.
A spa now on the campus?
Yeah. Well, she graduated. Well, we sent all of our students home when COVID hit. And she graduated in February. So actually she's looking for new leaders to take on. It's called spa dates, but things like that, that give students the practice the opportunity and the space to practice building a venture or working on a venture without having to do it remotely or not be able to do it until they get back home.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that that's a good way as well to create some excitement and show others what could be done and create more and more ideas around that. I think that's
exactly
that's right. That reminds me, well, back in time. So in France, I'm French originally, and in France, while I was doing my engineering degree, we have an NGO, kind of an NGO in schools called Junior Entreprise, which is basically a small company. which is set up as an NGO. But its goal is, because we were students as well, so we don't know everything like a graduated engineer, but we know fairly good things. So we propose services basically for a fee, which is a small fee to companies around the campus, basically to do any kind of project. And actually, that's where I discovered the world of enterprise, of business. Wow. And I did not know it. You know, my only I would say exposure to that was a couple of accountancy classes, which is I hate. But then, by doing that thing, I just discovered, you know, talking to companies, talking to small entrepreneurs, big companies, small companies. Said, oh, that's cool. That's pretty cool. And actually, I almost stopped going to classes and did that almost full time, which drew me into, you know, some challenges and things. But I hear you. I think that's the best way is, you know, jump into the water, learn to swim, and you will have a lot of people coming after you.
Best way to learn, it really is. And creating environments where they can connect and cross-pollinate and cross-pollinate ideas and co-create together. I think there's a lot of, like, what I do is really about creating the structure for students to really just come together and you know, they go off on their own. As long as you can create that, some framework for them to be able to collaborate and co-create, what they can create is pretty incredible. But it really just is about, you know, creating that community for them to come together.
And what is the share of real, I would say, real entrepreneurs, you know, among the student community? So is this a majority? Is this a minority who are really willing to go into that journey?
I'd say around 8% of the students that we interact with have active ventures that they're working on back at home. But it's wow. Yeah, I in my time at ALU, I've probably seen I guess 8% doesn't mean anything if you don't know the numbers that we have at ALU, but I'd probably seen over the time at ALU, I'd say serious ventures of students working on them back at home or like up and running campus ventures that are there to stay, probably between 40 and 50.
It's not bad.
No. Not bad. The lot, I'd say around half of those are campus based. And a lot of, yeah, but between 40 and 50 in 2.5 years.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty impressive. Because I think it's easy to get excited by an idea.
Yeah.
It's harder to sustain the journey over the long term.
Right.
And do you see, and on that front, do you see a big drop off rate? Basically, a lot of people get excited at the beginning, and then, you know, weeks after weeks, then you see just starting to see people going away.
Yeah, that happens quite often because the space, the way that we've positioned the SVP is really as a pre-incubator space. So try to get as many students just involved and exposed and curious. There are less students that, you know, stick with it from day one. But I think that getting them to try an idea out, realizing they're not excited about it anymore is just as valuable, because that kind of checks something off the list for them that they know, okay, now this is something that I'm not going to explore again. I can now go down a different route, or it leads to something else that they're curious about that they didn't consider otherwise. But I do see a lot of students, yeah, coming in, starting something and then having it fall off. But as long as you can help them, you know, help guide them in their like understanding of why that experience was valuable and what they can make out of it. I think that like that those outcomes are also what we're looking for. We want students to graduate ALU having a deep understanding of their own passions and interests, and having had tested those, actually have tested them. You know, like not just, when I graduated from college, I was like, I'm interested in education, but I have to now try my hand at it to see if it's something that I want to do. We want students to not only identify what they're interested in, but throughout their time at ALU, test out those interests to understand if that's really the path that they want to follow. So them coming and going, that's fine with me, as long as I can work with them to have them understand, have them identify if whether or not, you know, that was something that they'd like to continue to pursue in the future.
Mm-hmm. And so you launched that program so over 2.5 years. So same thing, you know, and I think that not everything, when I listen to you, you say, well, a lot of good success stories and cool things, but I'm pretty sure that shouldn't have been always a rosy picture.
Yeah.
So what was the biggest hurdles or hurdle, maybe there was only one, that you faced, and how did you overcome it?
In building the program in itself?
Yeah. Building and running.
Building and running. The biggest hurdle, 100%, has been I am a one-person team. The structure of the program has been positioned within other departments, but I'm the only person working full-time on building and running this thing. So I've had to be very resourceful and creative in how I manage my time and bandwidth. I lean on student interns quite a bit to help with, which has been an amazing opportunity for me to practice my own management skills, for students to be able to step into that role. But yeah, that's challenging because, as I said before, these students are full-time students. They're not full-time staff. They're not full-time entrepreneurs. So it, you know, at the end of the day, it really is just me who's been accountable for building this thing. So I'd say that has been a challenge, but one that I've learned to over time, just learn to navigate and, I guess learn to say no to things that I don't have capacity to take on. I'd say another challenge has been, you know, when you're working in this space of entrepreneurship in an education setting, as I've said before, you want this space to be inclusive, and you want all students to feel like they can approach it and experience it no matter where they are in the journey. If they're just curious about entrepreneurship, or if they are actively seeking funding for a venture back at home. So in designing a space that is accessible to everybody, it means that, and as a one person team, you can't have as much visibility or hands-on, high touch relationships with some of these ventures that you would like. Mm. And when you're designing a space that's inclusive for everybody, you do have to intentionally create different kind of tiers or pillars of the program for students to know how to access. You can't have, you know, a student who is just starting out attend an intimate fireside chat with somebody who's talking about, more technical skills than they're ready to hear for. But as a one person team, you kind of just have to make it accessible to everybody, because I don't have capacity to really design that level of detail in terms of the different tiers of the program. Yeah. That would be something that, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, no, it's always very, very difficult to be the lone guy who drives everything, trying to influence people to work with you, although you don't have, you're talking about honing management skills, but you don't have nobody to manage, actually. Right. So you need to influence them to work with you or for you. So it's harder, almost. But I just want to come back, because I like the idea of inclusivity. So, so students are coming from all over Africa, mostly. Mm-hmm. When we talk about inclusivity, I know Africa, sometimes it's a weird continent in many, many respects. And people tend to think, yeah, it's a country. Well, it's not a country. We know that it's a continent, and there are thousands of different tribes and languages and cultures. Even in the same country, you have dozens of different cultures. How do you cope?
You know, that's a good question. I think our students really lean into and celebrate that diversity. ALU does. That all those differences that you just described. I mean, our students experience that, but so do our staff, right? Like our staff, I think there are a handful of other Americans that work at ALU. But most of our staff come from across the continent. Those who are from the continent left and are now coming back. So that, you know, that level of diversity and different mindsets and different perspectives and experiences is felt across the organization. And we actually just really try to leverage that as our biggest strength. We are celebrating different cultures and our diverse community every chance we can get. And it has created the most incredible, incredible coming together of people. Like you, when we had our last year, our opening ceremony for when new students came to Mauritius, it just, the music and the dancing and the different, you know, attire that yep. students were wearing. And we teach them to celebrate where they come from and really be curious and inquisitive with one another on those differences. And students normally wouldn't have had, you know, the alternatives would have been going to school in their home countries where they wouldn't have had that exposure. And they're so excited to be able to meet people from different countries, a lot of which these are countries that they heard of, but have never met people from. And so yeah. there are, I think like one of my favorite things in the world is when you're like, when you have a false expectation or when you're proved wrong about someone or something. And I think that's yeah. happening every day at ALU where students are like, oh, I didn't realize that, you know, Nigerian food tasted this way, or, you know, something as small as that to something as big as like, I thought that, yeah, I don't know, but
a good paper soup.
yeah. But students, I mean, those assumptions are being busted all the time. And I think they have an amazing time celebrating one another and getting to know cultures that they otherwise wouldn't have been so exposed to. And then now we have students who have graduated. We have two graduated classes so far. And we see students being able to now visit one another in each other's countries and nice. Have to stay when they are going to work in another country, because now our students have this very pan-African mindset where they yeah. they really do feel like there's opportunity across the continent versus just in their home countries. And so now they have a network of other students, of mentors, guests who have come to ALU across the entire continent, which is amazing. So I'd say challenge of cultural differences is actually our biggest strength.
Yeah, and from what you say, what stands out for me is that where we see in many, many countries trying to, well, bring diversity or inclusivity as a kind of something which is forced, well, we need to have gender balance. We need to have blah, 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 all those balances. Now, because of the fact that, well, you put celebration of diversity as something which is not only natural, but that people are looking for, mm-hmm. well, it's just, it becomes automatically, well, you know what? Cool. And maybe a group of Nigerians will want a Kenyan, or we want a Senegalese into them because they will bring different perspective. And that becomes more natural, isn't it?
I mean, all of our venture teams are not just students from one country. Those who have nice. Like more than two people, yeah, it's always cross-pollination of students from across different regions even.
That's awesome.
ALU brings those people together, and when they're talking to external advisors or investors or whatever it is, having a diverse team of not just backgrounds but experiences and skill sets is, I think, yeah, I mean, early stage investors are really investing in the team, not the product or the service anyway. So being able to bring together people from across different regions is incredibly important.
It's very, very cool. And actually, that reminds me of a discussion we had a couple of weeks back with a Nigerian friend, actually, who has started a venture, 6-7 years. So we spent a couple of years together at Microsoft. So he was working in Lagos and then started his own company, two companies. And he was expanding Pan-African in many, many countries. And we asked, actually, how do you do that? Because doing business in Africa can be very costly, very difficult. So languages, time difference, culture, money, blah, 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 the whole thing. And I says, yeah, well, you know, you need basically your network. You need to know people in the country, trust people as well, and you need to create that networking effect that will work for you and not against you. And I think that's, the Pan-African view is very, very key.
I mean, that goes back to the system point. Like you need various viewpoints and players from across different networks that you can tap into. And that's exactly what ALU and our program is really trying to amplify or leverage.
Cool. Nice. So, do you see maybe something that I've been thinking about since we're starting to discuss? You know, most of the business schools around the world, whether it's the big ones, the big names, or even the smaller, really were, until quite recently, preparing people to join big companies. You know, where you were going at a business school, if you were going to BCG or PwC or EY, that was, you know, your thing. You did the big consulting groups, and then you moved to another kind of thing. So do you see the same thing happening at ALU, or because you're pushing entrepreneurship, moving towards, you know what, hey, go out, start something smaller instead of, you know, trying to work for a big name? Right. How do you see things moving?
I see somewhat of a similar trend. So we have a whole career development department focused on obviously placing or helping students land opportunities once they graduate. And the three pathways that career dev supports are, you know, going to traditional employment, which a lot are those bigger companies, consulting or finance. Then there are students who are pursuing further graduate studies. And then there are students who are pursuing the entrepreneurial route. And I'd say when students come to me, a lot of students are deciding between pathway A and pathway C, you know, going into traditional employment or entrepreneurship. And a lot of them have offers at companies, and they come to me and say, you know, I have a secure and, you know, promising opportunity to work at a bigger consulting firm, but it's not entirely what I want to do. I've been working on the side venture. Should I turn down the offer and work on my thing? And I mean, it's hard. I can't answer that question for them, but I think what I say is, if you've been building this on the side so far, I think having a strong foundation financially, especially, I mean, these jobs pay quite well. So having a strong financial foundation, amplifying and strengthening your network, because these are jobs in bigger companies that are incredibly well connected. And they also just teach students pretty foundational skills in terms of like thriving in the workplace, just learning how to work with others in a real professional setting. We stimulate that as much as we can for students, and they learn it a lot when they're on internships, but nothing actually beats just doing it and having firsthand experience. So I say to them, you know, if you can continue to work on your venture on the side, but take this opportunity 1 to 2 years just to have that strong foundation, you're never going to regret that, right? Like, you're never going to regret taking it. And this is saying if those two things are not mutually exclusive. But if it's a student who's like, you know, I'm about to secure my first, second round of funding, and we have an opportunity to really, you know, go big here, that's a different story. But that's not many of our students. And so I actually encourage them to kind of take a more traditional approach at first, because they have their whole lives. And if they can have that strong foundation, no one's can ever take that away from them. It's not going to hurt them unless it's a like really fortuitous timing and they're an entrepreneur who's about to, you know, be the next Elon Musk, you know.
who is South African and who we have on the list on our dream list for people to interview in this podcast?
Never hurts to try.
We'll get to him one day. I don't know when, but we'll get to him. And Fred Swenicker as well. He's on our list.
We'll send him this episode.
Sure. And you know, Fred, if you listen to this episode, you're really welcome. Just drop us an email and we'll find 40 minutes or even less if you don't have time to do an interview. That would be awesome. Just what you were talking about as a segue. So we're almost at the end. You know, I just realized that it's been close to 45 minutes we've been discussing together. It just went very, very fast. But that was what you were talking about, you know, going big companies, working on the venture on the side. So as a segue to my last question to you is that we ask, you know, almost every interviewees is, what would be your one advice to any entrepreneur or young entrepreneur who starts his or her venture now?
One advice.
it can be two, but at least one.
I think for a young entrepreneur, the advice I would give would be to invest in your network. I think use the young card, actually. And use the fact that if you're still in school and you're, you know, at a place like ALU where you're there to learn, use the young card and use a student card as much as you can. Ask people for their advice. People love to feel like they have advice to give and they love talking about themselves. Ask people to tell them your stories, their stories, and really spend time investing in your network, just talking to people that you think are interesting and are working in a space that you want to grow in. And then to keep them engaged, keep those people updated, tell them about your interests. I think that helps, like those people can be there for you for life. I think when inevitably you do fail as a young entrepreneur, those people can be there to help you get back up. They can help you understand how to turn that failing into a lesson and into a way forward. And you also never know how those can, like where those connections are going to lead. If you keep your network engaged, and keep them updated in terms of like where you're working and what you're interested in, you never know who they know and who's on the other side of that person's network. So I'd say as a young person, like really use the young card and invest in your network.
6 degrees of separation. You never know who knows who you know.
Be on the end there. You never know.
Cool. Well, thanks very much, Lucy. That was awesome. And it was a great conversation. Maybe last you know, thought, idea, point that you want to share with the audience.
Last point. I think this experience coming to ALU, building SVP, I'm kind of like in a very reflective space because I'm also transitioning out soon to go to business school. But I'd say the best part for me has been learning as much from the students as they have from me. Like I'm not that much older than a lot of the students that I work with. Being there with them, I find that the best way to really know or to learn something is to teach or to mentor someone, coach someone through it. And I'm in a lot of office hours with students who are just trying to explore their interests and figure out what it is that they want to do. And coaching students through those conversations has taught me more than I think I've ever, combined taught the students that I work with. And I just, at the conversations that we end up in help me explore my own interests and passions. And I think that, especially working with some of my student interns, helping them throughout their professional development cycle, helping them to identify skills and interests that they want to hone, and then watching them grow within those areas that they identify has just been the most incredible experience. But I think I've learned more than any of them combined. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to have gotten to work with them. And a lot of them are still people that obviously I still work at ALU, but the interns that don't work with me anymore, I speak to very, very often. There are some lifelong friendships in there, which is really incredible.
Cool. And you're going to bring a lot to Sloan. To Boston. I think that because this experience and I 100% agree with you, the best way to become an expert at anything is to teach that thing. And every time I'm lecturing on a topic, I'm always take challenges. I love challenges and always it's just I can do it, but I'm not really the top guy. And of course, I'm not good before. I'm a little bit better after, but I learned a lot. And even my students don't realize sometimes, they know more than I do, but I'm just, I just know how to speak. But it's the best way to learn. Honestly, it's a great way. Coaching people, I love coaching startups because they learn, I learn things almost every day on what they're doing, on the way they're thinking. Just the fact that they are not looking at things the same way as you are, just opens a lot of things.
You see how other people solve problems and how other people think about problems, which is, what's better than that?
Cool. Thanks very much, Lucy. And thanks to everybody who's listening and tuned up. You've been listening to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, a source of inspiration and actions from African leaders and founders. I'm Mark, co-founder and CEO of the Talk Collective, the company behind Entrepreneurs Talk Africa. And today, we had the immense pleasure of hosting Lucy Scott from the African Leadership University. Before our next episode, thank you for taking 10 seconds to leave us 5 stars on the podcast app you're using. It really helps us. So thank you in advance and see you next week for more inspirations and action from across the African continent. That's it. Thank you. Hey, welcome. You're back with the three of us, Jason, Gerald, and I, to talk about Lucy Scott interview. So how did you find it?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for that. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it was nice to get a bit of a different perspective coming from the education space. But one thing that I think stood out for me from the start was she, you know, she spoke about the how entrepreneurs, you know, the traits and risk-taking and things. But as she was saying it, you could tell that, you know, she has that mindset. She almost epitomizes some of the traits that she was talking about. And it was really interesting to see. And that learning from failure, that is so classic, that risk-taking about taking the opportunity that she was given, you know, those are all entrepreneurial traits. So I think she definitely found the field that, you know, she was born for. And I think it goes to show to our other conversations that you can be an entrepreneur in any setting. You can have that mindset in any setting and still, you know, progress and succeed. So I found that really interesting. And then when you guys started talking more about ALU and how they've attracted, you know, African talent from across the continent and building this ecosystem, it was really interesting to hear about that little bit of about the brain drain. And that's something, a problem that we've been facing so long where, you know, our talent goes abroad and doesn't come back. They find better opportunities elsewhere. So it was nice to hear that she was saying that some of them were coming back, which I think is what we need. But on the ecosystem part, what they're doing is so important, because if we want startups, entrepreneurs to succeed, we have to give them, enable them. And that's one thing that a lot of people miss from Silicon Valley and all of these other startup hubs is they have been being built for over 30, 40 years. You know, they have the pool of talent access. They have, you know, the ease of doing business. They have the funding. And like she said, it's all interlinked. And education plays a huge role in that, because we need leaders of the future to lead the new future. So the systemic ways we've been approaching education, we know the result of that. So we need to relook at that and make sure that the skill set that we're pushing out of college and university matches the ecosystem. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I think she has a bright future ahead of her and can't wait to see what she achieves.
Sure. Cheryl,
should take? Yeah. It was really refreshing to listen to her. In the sense, I'm aligning with Jason here in the sense that she definitely has this natural fiber for entrepreneurship. You can sense it, you can hear it. And the good thing is that she jumped in it without questioning too much. Shall I not, or whatever. Like, she's, well, a few initial questions, but then you jump into it, you get it done, you learn to swim, you make sure you don't drown, and you grow along the way. So that resonates with me personally, you know, as an entrepreneur. And I'm sure like other entrepreneurs out there listening to that would be like, ah, yeah, when I started, I was like that. That was really refreshing. On another point, which is something personally very important to me also, is when she spoke about the diversity of the workplace at ALU, and diversity right now, diversity and inclusion in the workplace and organization is something that is very touchy. I mean, very contemporary to what we are living right now. If we look at the different movements that has been showing up and fighting for that equality, inclusion, and diversity, and not only in the workplace and organizations, but in countries, when we think about Black Lives Matters, when we think about the movement of the LGBTQ communities to try and find their place in our society, in our organizations. And then we look at organizations such as ALU, who by design is a diverse and inclusive workplace. diverse in the sense of people from many geographical areas. And as you have said, if they are focused on Africa, Africa is a continent, we'll say it again and again, where you have lots of countries, lots of cultures, lots of different people from different walk of lives. And then add to that people coming from the US, like Lucy and Mauritius and all of that. And it's a super diverse work organization that is working and showing that it is actually possible.
Yeah. And to that point, I really agree with you. And I think that is such an important piece that they spoke about. But one of the things that was turned on its head, and I think a lot of people don't realize, is inclusion and diversity for the sake of ticking a box, like Mark says, that a lot of people do now, is seen as a negative almost, like, oh, we have to be inclusive. Oh, we have to be diverse. Yeah. But for me, as a person in the innovation field, that is just ridiculous. Innovation, diversity equals innovation. If you don't have different perspectives in an idea, or you don't have someone else, it becomes your, what it's just for you kind of thing. So I think it's a really important point that you bring up there, Gerald. And I think it should be seen as an advantage and not a disadvantage. Not some box you have to tick, but something you should do out of design. And ALU are showing that.
I agree. And I'm an opponent of forcing people to do things because it seemed like something which, as you rightly said, is negative. Mm. Okay, inclusivity, diversity should be seen as positive. Yeah. Unfortunately, dark forces are at play, and a lot of people don't want to be included, okay, or don't want to open their community to external forces because they think that it will influence them in the bad way. You know, I remember discussions a while back saying that, and don't take my word for that. I'm not speaking myself. It's just that, you should not, show homosexuals to those kids because they could become homosexual. What? Sorry, what?
It's something. Yeah,
but that's the thing I heard. You know, and it feels like, wow. But the fact is that there are some people who think, we should not bring too many women in a company because, women sometimes are pregnant. And if they're pregnant, they're not there. Yeah. What?
Yeah, exactly.
But I tell you, some people are thinking that way still in 2021.
No, but so. I mean, you say it a bit like a joke and things, but I mean, the sad reality
it's not.
And if you're a minority, if you're someone who's having to face those things, it's a part of your everyday life. And, it might be some number for a CEO who's trying to do his company, but on the other side, it's the life of somebody who by default gets passed up for the promotion or is not included in whatever aspect socially that is needed to raise, to go above the glass ceiling or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, man, I completely agree. It's a reality. It's a reality that we need to break.
Yeah. And maybe just one thing, because we spoke a lot about it and she came back on that. And that was her advice on the network and investing in the network. I think that's a topic that we discussed a couple of times already. Your contacts are key to your future. And it's not the more people you know, the better you are. It's really just, and she said it nicely as well. So it's all about, keeping in touch, letting people know what you're doing, what you're up to, what you're thinking, asking questions, and you never know what or who that person knows, what he or she will think about what you're doing and how he or she will help. So I think that's pretty, pretty important. And of course, the network effect, the fact that this is cross-pollination around different countries. I love the fact that when she said that the groups at ALU are always people from different origins.
Yeah.
Always. I think it's just awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, there's a lot of things to learn.
Yeah.
That was cool. Final thoughts? Are we wrapped?
Yeah. The best way to really know something is to teach it. I love that one. So I think that's my last word.
Cool. Well, thanks very much, guys. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'll see you next time. And by the way, Fred Swaniker, if you listen to this episode, this is a formal invitation. We would love to have you on the podcast. So just drop us a mail. Okay. hello@entrepreneurstoke.africa. We'll reply. The three of us will reply immediately. This is a formal invitation. We wait for you.